Have you wondered about living elsewhere in your retirement? Well, we have, almost daily. No, it's not a simple decision, especially when two people are involved.
Hi, this is
Gil
and Gene of Retire There, a podcast about retirement destinations. We live in Brooklyn, New York. Having grown up and worked in this area of the country, we're hoping to relocate when we're both retired. For us, it's the weather, the chaos, the noise, and the yearning to be near nature and not within 3 feet of human beings.
That's right.
In February 2020, we embarked on our journey to find that special place. We spent a week in Winter Park, Florida, which is beautiful, but something said it wasn't for us. As we were planning for the next trip, the pandemic arrived. Gene then gave birth.
I gave birth?
To this podcast. With so many baby boomers retiring, many must be relocating. Why not connect with and learn from them?
Here's a little background about us.
I'm Asian, born in Brazil, and grew up in Flatbush, Brooklyn. I'm an engineer turned attorney turned podcaster. I recently retired from a university career practicing higher education law. I love the academic environment, but it was time to do something else. I no longer have to set an alarm, drive in BQE traffic, or work with people who don't always share the same principles. Oh, did I just say that? You bet I did. I traded all that in to binge crime dramas into the wee hours, just a little bit, to develop the podcast, to volunteer, practice metalsmithing, tackle our possessions. No regrets so far, Gene.
I'm not Asian, and as Gil mentioned, I'm not retired. I'm just plain tired. Born and raised in Long Island, New York, a place I always wanted to leave. I'm a law librarian working in a court who loves his job, but we're retired by the time we select our ideal location. We will be speaking to folks from across the street to across the globe who have moved to their dream venues and more. So please stay tuned and remember, if you know anyone who has moved anywhere for retirement, let us know.
Thank you. Today, Retire There chats with Fiona McKenzie Spence about the tranquil and magical haven known as Gozo, Malta. Gozo is an island of the Maltese archipelago in the Mediterranean Sea. The island is part of the Republic of Malta. Gozo is the second largest island after the island of Malta. As of 2019, Gozo had a population of around 34,000 people out of Malta's total 480,000. Its inhabitants are known as Gozatans. That's cute, right, Gene?
Oh, yeah.
Gozo is one of the oldest inhabited places on Earth. Tiny little Gozo, inconspicuous as it is home to the oldest freestanding structures in the world. Jantia Temples, the 5,500-year-old complex, is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Interestingly, the site's name, Jantia, refers to the fact that it was built by giants. At least that's what local lore claims. Gozo grows a medicinal fungus that's found nowhere else. The Knights of Malta greatly prized this rare plant known as General's Root, which grows on fungus rock just off the coast of Dwarja. During much of the rule, between 1530 and 1798, access to fungus rock was tightly controlled. The plant was considered an important medicinal cure for ailments, including dysentery and impotence. I guess Viagra has taken over that. Okay. And now a little bit about our guest, Fiona McKenzie Spence. Gene?
Fiona is a writer, artist, photographer, mother, grandmother, and most certainly an adventurer. She has published 4 books, all available on Amazon, the latest of which, Rock Hopping Tales of a Single Granny, she will be discussing with us today, and in particular, the ideal retirement destination of Gozo, Malta. In November 2015, one of Fiona's abstract oil paintings was accepted by and hung in the Royal West of England Academy's open exhibition in Bristol, England. It was a huge accomplishment for a new artist who had only started painting 2 years before. Her work was exhibited alongside established and well-known artists, and Fiona was ecstatic to see her work hanging with theirs. In June 2016, this adventurous granny decided to emigrate to Malta, and her book is about this journey and her 4 years of life on the tiny island of Gozo.
So Fiona, thank you so much for joining our show. Would you tell us why and how you made the jump from England to Malta, and specifically Gozo? Listeners, please note that we are recording this show on November 14, 2021. And as of this day, a US dollar is equal to 0.87 euros or 0.75 British pounds. I always think of anything like that, like a buck in the US. All right, Fiona?
Well, I wanted to leave England because I just don't like the British weather. So I've been at war with the British weather really ever since I returned there in 1982. I wasn't able to go immediately after divorce because I had a boxer dog and he was quite poorly. He had major heart problems, so he couldn't travel. But he died in 2015, and that left me, you know, a free agent, basically. So I looked into Malta and decided, yes, That's where I want to go. There were some little things. I was being sort of spiritually guided there through some things that had happened several years before. I literally went out for a 3 week holiday 2016, and with the view to finding a house to rent, and that's exactly what I did. Returned back to the UK and then moved there in June of that year.
May I ask, because I personally am very interested, what kinds of spiritual signs, how did it guide you there?
Well, the first time was just a conversation in passing out at a black tie ball that I was at. And a friend just started talking about Malta. I didn't really think anything of it, but something obviously registered in my subconscious. And then I thought that I would go on holiday there. So I booked a holiday. I bought some holiday guides, but actually never ended up booking it. So I was going to go, bought a couple of holiday Malta guides. It was, I suppose, towards the end of 2015 or early 2016, I was really, really depressed and just couldn't, you know, work out what I was supposed to be doing in life, and had a kind of a very deep pray. And I was pointed to Malta, you know, very, very clearly in my head, Malta, Malta, that's where you're supposed to go. So I kind of thought, right, okay, yes, I've got those guidebooks. So I leapt out of bed, went down and looked at the guidebooks, went online and looked at everything about Malta. And then, you know, I thought, right, okay, yes, this is where I need to go. Because they speak English. So I didn't want to go somewhere where, you know, I had to learn a new language.
Sure.
The healthcare system is very good. So it was everything was falling into place very quickly and very easily for me.
Oh.
So there is a Maltese language though, but most of them speak English?
Yes, they do. So Maltese is a very difficult language to learn, but because of the close associations of Malta and Britain, the Maltese they learn English, you know, right from childhood. So they're multilingual, you know, bilingual when they're very small. And even the Maltese themselves, you hear them talking in Maltese and then they'll switch into English and they'll say a few English words and then switch back to Maltese. Apart from a few of the very, very sort of senior citizens on Gozo particularly, and probably Malta as well, they do all speak English. Mm-hmm. So it's not a language barrier at all.
And had you ever been there before?
No.
Wow.
I didn't know anybody there. I'd never been there before. So it was just people who couldn't believe it. You know, I was having house sales and things before going, getting rid of a lot of stuff that, you know, I didn't need anymore, and telling people what I was doing. And they couldn't believe it, really, that for the woman of my age that I was doing this without knowing anyone, never having been there before.
You are adventurous and courageous. I'm sure you've done other things along the line. Are you saying that all of a sudden you developed this bravery?
No, I think I can put this down to my mother's kind of gypsy spirit. I mean, she was the one that took us all off to Bermuda. You know, I think I've got it from her, really. Yes.
That's great.
You say that getting rid of clutter was cathartic.
Yes.
But you also say you burned some diaries. Is that true?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Do tell.
Well, I've been keeping a sort of, people call it a journal, don't they? Where you write in it every day. And I've been keeping them since I was in my mid 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm now of an age where, you know, you have to consider that I could drop off my perch at any day. And do I really want people reading this stuff? For some reason, I thought I might like to go back and read it, you know, all this information about relationships with people and just stuff that's really boring and very personal. And I thought it's time to burn this. So I did. Well, I've kept diaries, you know, going back some time, that I hope that my grandchildren will enjoy reading one day, but they're sort of minus the sexual exploits.
Well, all right. May I share? And I'm sure there are listeners out there who can relate. Maybe not so much the men. I kept, you know, diaries when I was young, the ones that had the little keys that you would purchase with the little locks. And I always thought, well, I don't want my sisters reading them. My parents, you know, they wouldn't really care. At this point, I don't remember what I did with them up until I was age of 10. So nothing exciting could have happened. And no one really cares if they stumble upon them. But in the last, I guess, you know, I retired, so I've had a lot of journaling and so forth. And I always fear of what someone might find in my journals. And so when I'm writing, I don't know about you, but I don't totally let go. But lately, since I retired about 4 months ago, I've been thinking on my bucket list, and I hate that phrase, is to make sure I get rid of all of those journals. And I don't have that many, but, you know, in several years, maybe, because I really don't want our son or even Jean here reading them, because... Well, there's nothing that I've hidden from you, Jean. The burning it sounds like a good idea. Okay.
I mean, I suppose it also depends on what you write. So a lot of my later diaries, I mean, yes, there's some boring things in it where I'm just sort of trying to record things that have happened that I might want to remember. But I also, there's a lot of kind of philosophical rambling and thoughts in there, and stuff that, you know, what's been happening in the world and what I think about various things. So I think one day it may be interesting to future generations. I have a journal that belonged to my great grandmother. She was a bit of a suffragette. Oh. And so it is interesting to read her diary, her journal that she wrote in late 1800s.
Wow. So that was passed on.
Yes. It's been handed down.
You know, I kept mine because I thought that they would be valuable if I wanted to go back and read about myself, those days where I wrote, why am I here? What is my purpose? But I think it's kind of painful. So maybe I will burn them sooner rather than later. And, you know, in the Chinese tradition, we do burn a lot of things for...
You burn everything.
For the dead. I can do the reverse and start a trend of burning for the living. Okay, I'm sorry. But that was fascinating to me.
All right, I have a question. Malta is part of the EU. Due to Brexit, was it difficult for you to maintain long-term status in Malta, or did you go before?
I actually left for Malta 2 days before the vote. I tried to get somebody to vote by proxy for me, but that couldn't happen, which I won't go into now. But because of the very close relationship and the huge number of Brits in Malta and Gozo, the very, very high percentage of the population. Yes. So if all the Brits had to leave, you know, Malta would really be in a bad way because they contribute so much to the economy, to the workforce, to everything.
Oh,
so
wow.
There's a very special little relationship. I think that probably comes down to, you know, what happened in the Second World War, the fact that the then Princess Elizabeth, Prince Philip, were out there in the early 1950s. So Malta's always kind of taken Britain, you know, as a big sister, maybe.
Oh, that's so interesting that there's so many English.
Yes, a lot of English are there.
Do you feel a little bit at home, so to speak, but without the weather?
No, you don't feel at home because the, you know, it's very, very, very rugged, dry. So, you know, you haven't got any big trees or anything like that. So it's very different to home, but very, very friendly. And the people are all so friendly and so nice. The Gozatans are just lovely, lovely people. And because there are so many British people and because there isn't a problem with the language, it's really easy to settle there and for it to become home very quickly. Yeah.
Are there many Americans or in your travel?
No. There are one or two, some American tourists, but not terribly many Americans who live there.
Okay. What about other countries? Are there Asians in your travels?
No, there are one or two people from other places in Europe.
So it's the English and the Maltese, basically.
Yeah, English and the Maltese. But, you know, you get the odd few people from Eastern Europe. Somebody I know quite well was from France. A couple of people actually from France. Mm-hmm. So people from around Europe, definitely.
Okay.
But further afield, not many Americans.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And it's so close to Italy, you'd think more Italians would be there, right?
There are loads of Italians there. Yes, lots of Italians. Because it is, I mean, only 90 minutes from Sicily.
Yes.
So yes, there are lots of Italians there. And also there are some people from some of the African countries.
Ah, right, of course.
That are there, but not many in Gozo, more in Malta. But they, you know, Malta has taken in its share of refugees. They've certainly done that. But, you know, it's a very small island, both Malta and Gozo. So they've not been able to take in that many.
Mm-hmm. What's the distance from Gozo to Malta? What does that involve?
It's a 25-minute ferry ride. Yes. Which runs kind of every 45 minutes. So, and even through the night. So you can get a ferry at 3:30 in the morning.
Wow.
Yes. Unless the weather's particularly bad, and then they have to stop the ferries.
I read about talk of a tunnel between Gozo and Malta. You think that'll ever be built?
It may be built. I think it'll be a few years yet, but people who live on Gozo are mostly very against it.
Sure.
Because it's going to kind of just make Gozo another little section of Malta. You know, Gozo is quieter. It's more rural. The roads are, you know, very kind of small. Some of them are great, but a lot of them are kind of bumpy. And the speed limit is sort of about 50 kilometers an hour. You know, the roads in Malta are fast. It's a bigger island. And yeah, people are a bit concerned about the tunnel. I think it's better to have the ferry because it's more inconvenient. But it gives you, you know, if you want to go through the ferry ride, then you kind of deserve to be in Gozo. If you want to just drive through a tunnel, you don't.
But even now, people in Gozo are, you don't like that so many people from Malta are coming over. Isn't that right?
It is. Unfortunately, it's a big problem. And the people who live in Gozo are finding it difficult because Malta is getting more and more crowded. It's very busy with traffic. The Maltese want to come over to Gozo for the weekends or public holidays to kind of get away from it all, like people want to leave the cities and go out in the countryside.
Oh, sure.
So they are doing that, and it is causing, you know, a little bit too much of a problem in terms of traffic. Everything's busy. You know, the restaurants all get booked up. Got queues to get back onto the ferry that are going several miles up the road. It is an issue. You know, the Gozatans, a lot of them are farmers, so they get up very early in the morning. They go to bed quite early at night. And the problem is the Maltese come over and they bring their dogs with them. The dogs are in a strange place, so they tend to bark all night. they also, you know, it's a weekend away, so they're having a party. So both the tourists and the Maltese can sometimes be playing loud music till, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning, and everyone else is, you know, trying to get to sleep and they can't. So yes, it can be an issue, particularly at the weekends. It is quieter in the winter because the Maltese tend to stay in Malta once the weather sort of, we get about sort of the end of December, and the weather starts to get a bit cold and a bit wet. So they tend to stay put until the end of April.
Okay. Can you talk to us about your dwelling in Malta and how did you find it when you moved there?
Well, that's a very interesting little story, actually, because when I went over to Gozo, the place I stayed was a bed and breakfast. And it was on this lovely little street. It was in a village called Arb, which is at the western end of the island. And it's a lovely little village that has probably some of the oldest houses in Gozo. And I looked at this particular house on this road that I was on, and I thought, oh, that would be a lovely house to live in. Mm-hmm. Anyway, fast forward, I arrive. I've lived in several of the villages on the island, moved around a little bit. Most of the houses are, or a lot of the accommodation are flats. Mm-hmm. So they're sort of 2, 3, or 4 story flats.
Okay.
They can be very cold in the winter because they're not done with central heating.
Oh.
So they can be quite chilly in the winter. It can sometimes feel colder in than it does outside.
Wow.
But after having moved to a couple of these flats, I then moved to the village of Arb and into that house that I had seen when I first visited. It became available for rent. So I lived there for 18 months and I just thought, wow, that's amazing. So, you know, you can manifest things when you put something out there to the universe. You know, I want to live in that house.
Right,
you
right, know, right.
It might take a little bit of time, but eventually it will happen. Okay. So I did that. And then I had to move out of there and moved to another very temporary flat in completely the opposite end of the island, in a village called Arla, which is an amazing village, very, very friendly. I met more people there than anywhere, largely because of a very well-known sort of drinking hole called Zeppi's. And they have live music there, or they did before, you know, COVID closed everything down. And
sure.
I'm not sure what's happening now, but it was sort of the social place and people would gather there. So I met a lot of people there. But before I left Gozo, I had actually returned back to the village, which is kind of in the middle of the island, just north of Victoria, a village called Shara, which has the Gigantea temples.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first village I lived in when I came to Gozo. So it was quite ironic in a way, I suppose, because I arrived and lived in Shara and lived there for 6 months. And then I left and lived in Shara for 6 months before I left the island. So it was quite nice. It felt almost as if, I've come home back to Shara, because it's a lovely village to live in. A lot of British people
all
live
Gozo.
There.
These are all Gozo.
It's all Gozo. Yes, I never lived in Malta.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, and I knew it when I went on holiday. Valletta is beautiful and it's a lovely place. And there are some great places on Malta. Mdina is great, Rabat, along the south coast, and Marsalschlock. So there are some lovely places, but it was just all felt too big and busy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I got to Gozo, I kind of knew within 24 hours of being there, this is where I need to be.
Okay.
So yes.
Okay.
It was a very definite decision very quickly.
So for our listeners interested in Gozo, I want to talk a little bit about the cost. Before we start that, I just wanted to say we're recording in mid-November 2021. And as of this day, a US dollar is equal to 0.87 euros, 3/4 of a British pound. So can you give us an idea of what the rent in Gozo goes for a flat, let's say?
Yes. So you can get a flat, depending on the quality, you can get them anywhere from pretty grotty at $350 a month up to something very nice for $600.
And that's pounds?
No, that's euros.
Oh, euros.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay. So, and if you want to pay $1,200 a month, $1,300 a month, you can live in a lovely old property, probably with a pool. The old buildings in Malta and Gozo are absolutely beautiful, stunningly built. Mm-hmm. The walls are very, very thick. They knew how to build because they were building these buildings, and it kept in the warmth, so that, you know, they were warm in winter and cool in summer because it kept out the heat. And they just have so much character.
Mm-hmm.
So that you do get houses of that caliber to rent. You can find a house to rent for $1,600 a month easily.
Mm-hmm.
But sadly, I wasn't able to stretch to that. So $500-600 a month will get you a nice 3-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
Oh, that's a good deal. Wow.
That's a very good deal.
Yes. $750, you know, you'll probably have some air conditioning, but not all of them have, you know, by a long stretch of the imagination, they don't have air conditioning, and you really do need it. It's extremely hot. I mean, it's why I left predominantly, apart from missing the vegetation of England. I just really couldn't cope with it being so hot because it really does start to get very hot in early June and doesn't really start to cool off until middle to the end of September. Air conditioners are very necessary.
Okay, good to know. And what about groceries and food? Where would you go? If you lived in Gozo, is it walking distance or did you have to drive?
Yeah, do many of these towns have like stores, like a main street?
They nearly all do. Yes, okay. They nearly all do. Little supermarkets and butchers. And,
oh, nice.
Nearly always something in all of the villages. Several. You know, so Arla, for instance, has got three little small shops for buying food, and Shara has got, you know, a bank, food shops, you know, decent little supermarkets, lots of restaurants, a lot of them have. So each village has its own little kind of hub of people and stuff that, you know, is going on, where you can buy things. And then, of course, the capital is Toria, where, you know, you've got the larger supermarkets and the shops and things like that. So you can get just about anything. Mm-hmm.
The costs, were they lower than, I guess, the British markets?
They were a little bit. And petrol was a little bit more expensive. Okay. So fuel, gasoline for cars. Mm-hmm. Electricity, probably a little bit more. Stamps. So a postage stamp in Malta is really, really cheap, much, much cheaper than the UK. But I think generally the cost of living was lower. I mean, you know, I was paying much more rent than that in England.
Oh, sure.
You know, you have this thing in England as well called council tax, which you have to pay. There is none of that in Gozo. So you can live very cheaply there. Wow. You know, you can buy vegetables from they have these farmers going around with their lorries selling vegetables and fruit. And you can buy from there, and it's very, very cheap.
Okay.
So it's a very good place to retire because of the lower cost of living.
Wow, okay. That's surprising because a lot of times islands are really expensive. I guess part of that is they have their own farms, huh?
Yes, I think so. And, you know, there's a lot grown in both Malta and Gozo because the weather. And what they do ship in, they tend to ship in from Italy. And, you know, it's a 90-minute ferry ride. There's a lot of stuff from Italy, you know, is great. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you needed anything, could you order from Amazon or if you need, you know?
Yes. A lot of people ordered from Amazon. Unfortunately, you can't do that now. And I have a real problem with Amazon at the moment because we can't, you live in Europe, you can't buy any longer from Amazon UK. So you have to deal with either Amazon Italy or France or Spain or something like that. And there's a language barrier. You know, they don't speak English. They don't speak English. The website isn't in English. Yes, it's a really big problem. It makes it very difficult to actually have any kind of customer relation thing going on.
Why don't they have Amazon? Why don't they have Amazon UK anymore?
I don't understand.
They do have Amazon UK, but you have to pay customs now. So anything you bring in, basically pay double what it costs because you're charged by customs. I've gone to the UK to try and sort out the problem I'm having with Amazon Italy, but apparently each Amazon site, so whether it's France, Spain, Germany, Italy,
it's in their language,
they're all
right.
Individual. They're all individual businesses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. They're
okay.
All subsidiaries. So I can't go to some supervisor in Amazon UK to deal with Italy. So it's a nightmare. But yes, people used to import things. You know, you can buy stuff. If you can't get it in Malta, you can buy it online. But you just, you know, you can't do it from the UK anymore since Brexit.
Yeah.
There's heavy customs duties.
Right, right. If we could just go back for a moment in terms of food shopping, do you need a car in Gozo or do people generally walk? Is there public transportation?
Yes, there's very, very good bus service. Excellent bus service. So people use that. You don't necessarily need a car because if you live in a village that has the grocery stores that, you know, you can get enough, more or less everything you want and you can use the buses. So you don't need a car.
Okay.
You can get away without one. You know, you're going to be restricted, though, as to where you can go because the bus route's the main bus route going around the villages.
Right.
You're a bit restricted without a car.
Okay.
But you certainly can live without one.
Okay. So Gozo is elder friendly. I hate the word elder. For those folks who need to get around and so forth, they can just pretty much walk, or is it the terrain, like you said, rocky? And
it is hilly. So there are hills, significant ones, in some places. Yes, it's easy to walk around in the villages. People can do that. There's a high elderly Gozotan population. So there are a lot of senior citizens who are Gozotan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that, are they respected, do you think?
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, it's a really, really safe place. You know, being a woman on my own, mm-hmm. I felt completely safe.
No, that's just so important, yeah. Because we have women who have been writing into our show and commenting. Many of our guests have been couples. When you're a single woman, there are different considerations. And so it's yes. important when you're moving somewhere on your own.
Yes. And one thing I just have to, it's come into my mind. One thing, if you do have a car and you need to get some repairs done on it, if you can find the right mechanic, and there are a number of them on the island, it is so cheap.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to say the
really, yeah. really. No, it's so cheap. Wow. I mean, honestly, it's unbelievably cheap. Oh. But you've got to find the right mechanic.
Right.
But it's yes.
And
compared to the UK,
and the right mechanic to deal with the foreign type of vehicle to get the parts and all that. I would.
Well, there are vehicles there of every kind, all over the place. You don't see that many luxurious cars. Mm-hmm. You know, the odd sports car, maybe Ferrari or whatever, will come over from Malta, but nobody on Gozo owns one of those because you just don't want to take it on most of the roads in Gozo. Right. So you'd be very limited as to where you could go. You know, you want to go down the bumpy roads to get to the certain beach.
Sure. Yeah.
You want to go off here to go and have this lovely walk. Uh-huh. So you need to not worry about your car too much.
Right. So what kinds of cars do you see? Is it a Volkswagen or no?
Oh, just about everything.
Jeeps.
Quite a few. Yes. Jeeps. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a little old Kia Avella. it was ancient and it was perfect for Gozo. And I used to get in and out of it wherever I was, and I left the windows open. It was unlocked. You know, nobody bothered to take it.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't get ticketed. No tickets.
Oh, you will get a ticket if you park in the wrong place.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay. Because
yes,
it sounds
yes.
so free.
Yeah, okay. No. And there is one thing you know, people you see on buildings all the time, no parking, garage in use day and night. And you never park in front of that place, mm-hmm. because people do drive in and out of their houses, or sure. they use it. So you have to be very careful about that.
Mm-hmm. Did you purchase your car in Gozo?
I actually bought it in Malta. Okay. But I wish I had bought it in Gozo. So in hindsight, it probably would have cost me less and I would have got a better car. Cars to buy are very expensive.
Uh-huh.
So if you're a Brit and you've got a decent car, if you've owned it for 2 years, I go into this in the book a little bit more, mm-hmm. it might pay to import it. I mean, with the car I had in the UK, it wouldn't have. But if you've got a sort of a car that's worth, you know, $8,000 or $10,000 in the UK and you've owned it for a couple of years, by all means, import it, mm-hmm. Because it'll cost you an awful lot more money to buy a car of that caliber over there.
Okay.
What about restaurants? I hear that in Malta, restaurants differ from Malta to Gozo. Is that so? The food difference?
It's probably not so much different as you know, there's a much wider variety of restaurants in Malta. So maybe a more diverse cuisine can be found in Malta than in Gozo. You know, the food's great. You can go to some more expensive restaurants and get amazing meals, and then, you know, reasonable meals for reasonable prices. Mm-hmm. So if you're going out for, let's say you want to go out for lunch, and you have, so this is just me, so one person. If I have a starter and a main course and two glasses of wine, I'd probably pay 22 euros.
Nice.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Yeah.
23 euros.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What kinds of food? What is Maltese food, basically?
Must be a lot of seafood, right?
Yes, there's quite a lot of seafood, but one of their national dishes is rabbit.
Oh.
So they do amazing things with rabbit, although I've never eaten it because I'm Well, I'm not vegetarian, but for the last 30 years, I've only ever eaten birds or fish.
Me
so
too.
I'll eat chicken or pheasant or duck, but mm-hmm. nothing else. Mm-hmm. But they do very, very good rabbit. You know, they're good with seafood, pasta. There is a big Italian influence, definitely. Mm. Sure. But with the Maltese cuisine, because the culture, you know, over the centuries has been influenced by, you know, Arabic. There was a bit of French. Mm-hmm. So their cuisine is kind of a real hodgepodge of different cultures.
Delicious. Yeah.
Sounds delicious.
And now there's a very strong Italian culture because so many Italians are in Malta and Gozo mm-hmm. working or, you know, in restaurants. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So no English food influence, huh?
No, none at all.
I have no comment about
that. No. We interviewed a Brit not too long ago, and he said, no, he moved to Thailand, and he said, no, we are not known for food. And it's interesting. It seems like a lot of people comment on that.
Well, the food's supposed to be better in England now, right?
Well, there's also a lot of Indian food in
yes.
England.
Yeah.
Much
yes.
less.
Yeah, and great Indian food. Yeah, I heard that.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And you know, when you're looking at great British food, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's extremely good, but you know, people kind of think of British food as sausages and mash and egg and chips, and it, you know, it isn't that.
Right.
So the British cuisine is amazing, mm-hmm. But you've just got to have the right chef cooking it for you.
Okay. How did you get to Malta? What transportation? How far are you or close to an airport?
So I flew from Bristol. There are regular flights from Bristol to Malta. Mm-hmm. It's a three-hour flight.
Oh, nice.
Just about. So it was relatively easy to do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there are regular flights from the UK to Malta. So it's, you know, a daily occurrence mm-hmm. because there are so many tourists.
Okay.
So it's a huge tourist destination particularly for British, but for people everywhere. Mm-hmm. So the airport is, you know, quite a busy one and easy to get to. Yes, it wasn't a problem.
But okay. there's no airport in Gozo, right?
No airport in Gozo. So okay. you arrive in Gozo by ferry.
So I want to also go back a little. When you moved from the UK, you had to declutter, I think you mentioned earlier. How was that process?
Yes, I did, because when I was married, we had a, you know, a very sort of old Devon farmhouse that had lots of wooden windowsills and places for antiques and things. So, you know, I've been a collector of nice things, but stuff, far too much stuff. And I still have far too much stuff. Mm-hmm. I've had two other sales in Gozo, and I need to have another one now where I am.
Oh, you mean you accumulated all that?
I accumulated so much, and I haven't bought anything else for years, but I've still got too much stuff. And you realize this, that when you realize this is when you have to live sort of 8 months without it, because it took 6 months basically to get my stuff from Malta to where I am now. And I lived for that time without it. And you realize then when you get it all back, what on earth am I doing with all this?
What kinds of things did you like to collect or still like to collect? I'm curious.
Little artwork, unusual. Artwork, yes. A lot of that's my own. I mean, you can see this one behind me.
That's one of
my paintings. So I have a lot of my own artwork. But it's kind of, you know, going into what you call antique junk shops in Devon and finding an antique that you haven't seen anywhere else. And you kind of think, oh, I've got to have that. It's so unusual.
Yes, yes.
You know, and it could be like an old-fashioned kitchen scale or
I know.
Or something. I relate. So it's all this kind of stuff that I've collected. And,
I see behind you, there's some interesting pieces that looks like a little box. That box.
Yes, that's one.
Oh,
that's
beautiful.
a little, I think it's lead or something, teapot, old little teapot.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's one of my finds. That's exactly the kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm into vessels and containers. You know, the older they are, the nicer they are.
Yes.
So when you flew from Bristol the first time, how many suitcases did you bring?
Oh, that was quite a funny story, really, because I'd been staying with my sister and I had to bring, obviously, my computer, my printer. I had to bring warm clothes as well as summer clothes. Mm-hmm. So I booked excess baggage with the airline before I flew because I knew I was going to have to, bring more than just a 20 kilo suitcase. Mm-hmm. So I had the excess baggage. I had to have a bit of a fiddle around when I got to the airport because I'd packed one thing bag that had a bit too much weight. So I had to put it in something else.
I've done that.
But they were very, very good, the airline. So it was Air Malta that I flew. And they were very, very good and very accommodating and didn't charge me because I think I was actually 2 kilos over the excess baggage that I'd paid for. So that they just ignored that.
So, because we know people who have moved, for retirement and they've had 9 large suitcases and then they had to ship things afterwards. Yeah. How do you give up all that? I mean, did you give away a lot of things to your family? And you must have had
It wasn't that, because I had a 20 foot container to ship all my stuff out. So I was just getting rid of stuff that really, I don't need this. I don't need that. So it was, I wasn't getting rid of anything that I really loved or wanted to keep. I was just getting rid of extra stuff, too many pots and pans in the kitchen. Yes. Because again, when I was married, we did a lot of entertaining, having dinner parties and big parties. So I was doing a lot of cooking and I suddenly, didn't need all these kitchen things. Mm-hmm. So I got rid of a lot of that.
Right.
This kind of thing. So, but yeah, I still a 20 foot container to ship all my furniture and stuff over.
Wow. Must be.
Yeah.
Let's move on to healthcare. What's the healthcare like in Gozo?
It's very good, which was one of the reasons why I thought it's a good idea to go, because there's a good hospital on Gozo. There are also hospitals in Malta. You've got a great selection of surgeons and consultants covering absolutely everything. You can go and see a doctor if you want to not pay. You can go to a clinic and sit and wait, or you can find a private doctor and you pay 15 euros for a consultation with a private doctor.
Wow, yeah. That's nothing. And okay.
I had a doctor, he's a doctor in Shara, and I have to say he was the best doctor I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
In terms of thoroughness. Yes, absolutely. If you booked an appointment to see him, if you needed to be talking to him for 30 to 40 minutes, you were talking to him for 30 to 40 minutes. Wow. In the UK, they're looking at their watch, it's all 10 minutes, it's time you were up. No.
Just like America.
The healthcare is very, very good. Yes, which was one of the things, it's important if you're thinking of retiring there.
Of course.
The healthcare is great. Yes.
Okay.
So did you have private healthcare or did you pay out of pocket?
I paid out of pocket.
Okay. And it wasn't that much money.
No. So, but I would suggest, you have private healthcare.
The catastrophic thing.
So. I think I did have it, but in the end I cancelled it because I had it in the UK and it obviously I couldn't use that anymore. So I did have some private healthcare at one stage, but I thought actually I'm just going to cancel this. Mm-hmm. So I just paid to see the doctor when I needed to.
And I assume they have all the specialties that one needs because it's absolutely not like everyone can fly to England. Yeah.
Okay. No. You might have to go to Malta rather than the hospital in Gozo.
Right.
If you really need something. Okay. But, the hospital in Gozo deals with most things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just a ferry right away. It's so short, if you do.
And there's also a helipad. So, you can be flown by helicopter. And some people do fly into Gozo by helicopter. So there is a helipad.
Mm-hmm. That must be expensive. But I guess if you need to, you need to.
You're dying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what the taxes are like in Malta?
Yes, they are, I think, 25% up to a certain level of income. Mm-hmm. I paid a little bit of tax. So I think from memory, you're allowed to earn, I think, just over 9,000 euros. Tax-free, and then you pay in stages. So it's very like the UK. you pay up to, if you're earning a certain amount, 25%. And then if you pay over a certain, if you earn over that, you're going to pay 40%, or maybe 35. So they might be a little bit less than the UK, but it's not known as a tax haven. If that's what you, it's not.
Sure.
No.
Sure.
Good. Okay. Yeah. And what activities were there that you participated in or that you knew about?
Well, there are lots of water sports. Mm-hmm. So it's a great place for diving, if people like diving.
Yeah, it's world famous for diving. I know that.
Yes, it's a great place for diving, you know, water sports. So boating, sailing, just enjoying the beaches and the sea. But in terms of stuff, you know, Malta's got a great golf course. You can go riding. There are theatres, music. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the Earth Festival in Malta once a year, which is, you know, it's like Malta's Glastonbury.
Is that considered the carnival?
No. There is a carnival in Gozo, actually, which is called the Nadur Carnival. Uh-huh. And that's held in Gozo. Yes, that's something to behold, actually. it's not for retirees, really. It's for the 20-somethings.
Oh, really?
20 and 30 somethings, yeah. Because they dress up like mad and the music goes on till, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning or something ridiculous. Goodness. But there, you know, there are things to do. You know, there's a quite a vibrant art scene going on. There's theatre. There are festivals what they call the festas throughout the summer in every village. There are fireworks and, you know, Malta's it's a very devout Catholic country.
Yes.
So there are lots and lots of religious saints' days where it's a holiday. And all the statues come out and they're carried and the priests are all in their robes and, you know, there's a lot of spectacle goes on. Yes. So really, you won't be bored. That's for sure.
So if you wanted to take, let's say I wanted to learn ceramics and pottery, are there people or places that one can take advantage of?
Yes, there is a woman, an adult education kind of night school that you can do. So you can, you know, do language lessons or pottery or jewelry making or things like that. Mm-hmm. So there's that you can do.
In Gozo.
In Gozo.
Okay,
yes.
Got it.
So
very nice.
So you can do those. And there'll be a lot more going on in Malta, which, you know, I didn't really know about. I have discovered since I left, they have reinstated the fast ferry from Gozo to Valletta, which if they'd had that, I mean, I don't know, I'm saying this because it was the heat, really. I really wish that I'd had that opportunity when I was there, because to be able to go literally on a ferry from Gozo to Valletta would have been amazing. And I would have gone probably at least twice a month because Valletta is amazing. You know, it really is a fantastic place to go for restaurants, for just looking at things at night, to walk around the three cities opposite Valletta. You know, it's fantastic. So that will have made a huge difference to people's lives in Gozo.
Okay.
And do you think it was tough being a single woman in Gozo or a single person in Gozo?
I don't think any more than anywhere, really. You know, I mean, I made friends very quickly. People are friendly. There are other single people there. Not everybody's married.
Jean.
You know, where, it doesn't really matter where you are. You know, if you're single, you're going to come up with the same things that mostly everyone around you is married.
Right.
But I've been single long enough now that I just accept that, and it doesn't really, I don't notice it anymore.
Yeah, it must be wonderful.
All right. you seem to have loved Gozo, but you mentioned you left. Why did you leave?
It was too hot. I just couldn't take the heat.
Oh, wow.
I really couldn't, because, you know, it is so hot that you really can't be outside after 7:30 in the morning.
What?
You can't go out again. You can't really go out again until about 7:30 at night. So it's, you know, if you've got no air conditioning, I was spending 4 months of the year living like a mole indoors, you know, trying to stay cool with fans on either side. You know, it gets really hot. I mean, 35 degrees is very common, and it can go up to 37.
Oh, okay. Celsius. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Celsius. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It was just too hot for me. Some people don't mind it. Doesn't bother them.
It's hot and humid, right? Because of the
water. Yes, it is as well. It's humid.
Right.
So it just was too much. And I also really missed, you know, the kind of vegetation and the difference in scenery, because it is, Gozo is quite a small island. It's very barren and dry and kind of this yellowish color, because the houses are all built out of this yellow stone, and then you've got the stone walls. Mm-hmm. So it goes lovely and green in the springtime.
But then it gets so putrid. But then,
you know, by the end of May, it's drying out. And it's very, very, very barren and dry all through the summer, again, till probably the end of November, when it starts to green up again, because there's been some rain.
So that's the best time to go is in November.
The best time to go, October, November, December, April and May. March can be nice, but it can mm-hmm. still be a bit cold. Yeah. But April and May. So basically what you've got in Malta and Gozo is you've got 6 months of great weather. And you've got 6 months of not so great weather, because it's cold in January and February, and it's too hot in June, July, August, and September.
But for somebody who doesn't mind the heat, you think it would be a good place to retire for some people?
Oh, definitely, yes. If you don't mind the heat, or you know, if you've got an air conditioner, you can cope with it. Right. You just have to have somewhere to get out of the heat.
Right. Yeah. But that sounds like the whole day, 7:15 a.m. to 7:15 p.m.
You know, the sun starts to come up at sort of 5:30.
Yeah.
So by 8 o'clock in the morning, it's hot already.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I that you know, not
it's too
for
hot
me.
To be
not
out in it. No, it's it, yeah. it. I found it wasn't for me either.
Right.
It just got to be too much.
Yeah. So I have a question. In your book about moving to Malta, mm-hmm. you say that islands have their own sleepy way and life, and small island people are chilled out, generous, and kind. Did you really find that in Gozo?
Definitely, yes.
Interesting.
I mean, you know, the Mediterranean temperament, it doesn't matter whether you're Maltese or Greek or whatever it is there under the surface. Mm. So you don't want to upset anyone with Mediterranean, who's, you know, any kind of Mediterranean temperament, because they can get upset very easily, you know, go off a bit like Mount Etna. But generally speaking, yes, very kind, very, very sweet, very gentle people. So yes, just wonderful.
Right.
Yeah.
So
very welcoming as well to the British. You know, they love the British.
Oh, that's good to know. So, you know, you can feel like slipping right in there. So while you were still in England, you had this thought where you realized that you'd gotten to the point of actually looking forward to death. What did moving to Gozo do to change that?
It made me realize, actually, yes, there is still something here that is going to be fun. Yeah, it made me kind of think, yes, this is going to be fun. I'm going to start living again.
Oh,
that's great.
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't want to pry too much into your privacy. See, that's how you say it.
yes.
So you have a whole different outlook now, may I ask?
Well, yes. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I wasn't contemplating suicide whatsoever. No way. But it was just like, you know, actually, you know, the greatest holiday ever is going to be when I drop off my perch. And because I have such a strong physical belief. I really do believe that, you know, this physical dimension is a very temporary experience.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not one of these people that's going to be, of course, yes, I'll be a little bit nervous, but you know, I'm actually thinking, well, when you do die, it's going to be amazing because, you know, it's going to be great. You know, you're not going to have this physical thing that's your body. You're going to be completely free of it. So, you know, that was where it came from. It's like, you know, gosh, I can't wait to die.
Interesting.
It was coming from that because I was just kind of so bored and lost.
Oh, wow.
That was why I mentioned that. Yes.
I love the phrase falling off your perch.
Yes. Or drop off your perch. Yes.
Drop off your perch. Because my parents, more so with my father, we used to have this phrase like, it wasn't, and this is in Chinese, so I don't have the direct translation. There was a phrase we used to use like, when you go, die, die. You know, I just don't remember it. But it was like, that was how we were able to discuss death. And right. if we had yes. questions in the family about death, we would use this phrase just to avoid the word death. But I like your phrase much more. You know, I'm thinking of myself as a little parakeet because I talk a lot. And then one day I'll just boop, you know, kind of drop yeah, over. And hopefully yeah. there'll be no pain, you know, while I drop. Maybe.
Absolutely. and you know, the thing is having these conversations,
yeah.
You know, and I've had so many philosophical conversations mm-hmm. at Zeppi's, particularly with wow. friends there, because, we'd meet up on a Sunday afternoon. And yes, unfortunately, you know, the wine would be flowing by sort of 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes. You know, well, there is lunchtime. You know, you have wine at lunchtime. Yes, as long as it's in my book, as long as it's not before noon, that's okay. Before lunch, before noon, it's you know.
Oh, don't worry about it. We live in a place where there's a bar in every block.
Yeah.
But having philosophical conversations and, you know, talking about life and talking about death is part of life. You know,
yes, it's going to
happen
part.
To all of us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's no good sweeping it under the carpet.
That's right. So I agree.
Okay. This has been wonderful. You know, you mentioned that you left Gozo and you're in an undisclosed location. I just hope that when you write your next book, you'll come back on the show and tell us about that place. I might do that. I hope it's not England, but
definitely not. No.
Oh, it's
no,
not.
No,
it's not. Okay.
No. I couldn't cope. The weather in England was even worse than the weather in Malta. In terms of me being able to cope.
Oh, come on.
But from the other extreme.
Yeah, but you can still go out.
I can't deal with a cold either. So.
Oh my goodness.
I'm a bit. Do you know the children's story of Goldilocks and the three bears?
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
of course.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'm found somewhere now where the temperature's just right.
That's right.
Oh, so we're so on the same page, you and I.
Oh, you have to come back.
Yes.
Promise you will.
I will, definitely. Okay. And I thoroughly enjoyed this. Okay. Thank you very much for having me.
And just to remind people, the name of Fiona, well, first of all, it's Fiona Mackenzie Spence. And the name of her book about Gozo and Malta is Rock Hopping Tales of a Single Granny.
I love it. Moving to
Malta. Book one.
Nice.
Yes. And the first part of the book really does actually give people information on what to do in terms of packing up and emigrating. So once they've made the decision to emigrate, what they then need to do, you know, finding the right removal people, right. all of that stuff. So it's a very useful book, as well as,
yes.
you know, even if you're going on holiday to the islands, it's a great book to take with you because it's got so much information about Gozo and Malta.
Nice. Great. Okay.
Do you have any
words of wisdom for people moving on to retirement and moving and anything?
Yes. I think, you know, just forget about your fear. You can do it. Yes, it can be scary, but once you jump, you know, it's amazing. It really is.
Oh, that's so great. And by the way, if I wind up going to Gozo, I might be the first Asian, but I'll work on my British.
I'm sure you won't be the first one.
You won't be the first. No.
I know. I'm just playing. But I love all foods, certainly the Maltese. So that'll be nice.
Yes, you'll have to try their rabbit.
Oh.
Because I've heard it's very, very good.
She will.
And you'll have to say hello to everyone for me.
Oh, absolutely. We'll do.
Does everybody seem to know each other there? Is it that small?
Yes, it's pretty small. It is. So a lot of people know each other.
Wow.
And, you know, and it doesn't take long to integrate. You know, you can be sitting outside in a cafe and just start talking to somebody and make friends. You're exchanging numbers. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very friendly place.
Oh, and, so we'll just say we know Fiona.
Me, you know, on my own. Yeah, we know Fiona. And Hamish, my dog as well.
Oh, Hamish.
Because they all got to know Hamish.
Oh, Hamish.
My Jack Russell. Yes. Oh, so if you mention Fiona and Hamish, they'll all know who it is.
Okay, very good. All right, we'll do. Stay in touch. And it's been lovely.
Yes.
Really.
Yes.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you know someone who's relocated for retirement and wishes to share their story with us, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is gg@retirethere.com. Our website is retirethere.com, and you may follow us on Twitter @retirethere_. Now, if you've liked our show, please subscribe and rate it in Apple Podcasts. In the meantime, be well.